Hello and welcome to episode 18 of the Complimentary Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Katie Langerman, joined as always by Anthony Hobday. And today we've got kind of a fun episode in store where we're just going to talk about some ideas around the future of interface design and like upcoming trends that we potentially see happening.
Wild predictions.
Wild predictions. I don't know that mine are super wild. Maybe some of them are blue sky. Mm. Dreaming.
I just, I'm naturally wary of predictions. And so I like that you introduce this as a fun episode because I don't want anyone to take these seriously.
Right.
So I call them wild to set expectations.
We can't predict the future. We can just give our own opinions and what we're seeing.
And we shouldn't try unless it's for fun.
Yes. Definitely. How should we kick this off? What do you want to start with?
Well, I actually have a topic this time about how my week has gone.
Oh my gosh, Anthony, how's your week been going?
I know that in the past I've been a bit resistant to the banter at the start of the episode, but this time I thought, oh, I actually have something that's, well, I think I'm excited because it's related to interface design.
Okay.
So I'm naturally a bit wary of technologies that are hyped a lot. And I think I'm also excited because this is relevant to the episode. But I now pay for ChatGPT Plus. And I've been using GPT-4 and GPT-3.5 when I'm kicked off GPT-4 for hitting the limit.
Yeah.
I rarely hit the message limit because it's 50 messages every 3 hours right now. And I've only hit it once when I was, but that's the reason I'm bringing it up is that I've been using it to write JavaScript for me.
Yes.
Because if you're a designer and you know some HTML and CSS as I do, I feel bad for those designers who don't know any of that because they're even further back on that can't do it myself spectrum. It's always bothered me that JavaScript is the thing that's holding me back from writing interactive sort of mini tools online. And so I realized I could do that with ChatGPT. And so I've been sort of playing around. First of all, I tried to create a tool where basically you put in the background and the foreground color and it tells you the contrast ratio and you press a button and it adjusts the colors brightness automatically to give you similar colors that have the right contrast ratio for accessibility. I thought that would be a useful tool because most contrast color contrast checkers online are awfully designed and they're really like, they maybe require you to enter a hash or they don't require you to enter a hash. And if you put the wrong one in, you can't type in enough characters. That sort of thing really bothers me because apparently the people who care about, I shouldn't say this, but apparently the people who care about accessibility don't care about interaction design.
Oh boy. Whew.
Which feels like a strange, strange choice to make, a strange, you know, I would have thought you'd care about both because you're making it, you know, more accessible in a broad sense. Anyway, so I started that and then I started writing another tool where you can copy parts of lorem ipsum. Very quickly and easily because I often want it and I want a certain amount and some of the tools online, you open it up and it's just to copy some text out of the page and they give you a cookie warning.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, why are you?
Clicks.
Yeah. So that's annoying. So I've been doing that. But the one problem with ChatGPT is that it seems like you can, not easily, but once you start getting into the really specific stuff, you can basically paint yourself into a corner where ChatGPT is getting confused about things.
Yeah.
And you ask it, oh, it's having this problem now, and it rewrites it, but then it has the problem you had 5 minutes ago.
Yes.
So, oh, but now it's gone back to having this problem. And so that's where I think me knowing JavaScript, I would come in and debug it, basically.
Yeah.
But I can't do that. And so I've had a lot of starting again from scratch.
Yes.
And trying to get it down sort of the correct path. It's like going down a maze almost.
Yeah, and re-explaining it constantly.
Yeah. I don't know if you've had much experience with ChatGPT.
This is how I basically do my entire job, Anthony, except I use GitHub Copilot. I don't use ChatGPT at work. But I basically, it's become my pair programming buddy because I know just enough JavaScript to be dangerous, but I don't know the fundamentals because I didn't study computer science. So I can tell it what I want and then go back and forth with it. And I think it's a little bit easier in GitHub Copilot because it's like I'm using it inside my file, so I don't have to keep going back to the chat to ask for stuff. But I've used the chat for non-work things. Like I built a bingo game recently for my partner. And that was like, that's a really good one for ChatGPT because it's very basic, like functionality, basically. And I just use vanilla JavaScript for it. So I love this tip though, because it's just like, you can totally unblock yourself if you're a designer and you need a little bit of JavaScript and you kind of know what you want to achieve, but you don't know how. It will get you there. And then you just like open a PR and you're like, hello, engineers. Here's my pull request. Is this good? And then you're done.
Yeah, I think as long as you have someone who knows what they're doing to check it, that's sort of the ultimate combination. Or if you know what you're doing yourself, obviously there are people who use it, like you say, as a co-pilot. And the reason I wanted to bring that up is because it relates quite strongly to the future of interface design. I think ChatGPT, AI in general, machine learning in general, people talk a lot about how it's going to be the future. And I've avoided it until now because of the hype, and I'm sort of wary of hype in general. But
wait, hold on. You've avoided using it this whole time until just now?
Yeah, about a week ago I signed up. Okay, so I will say before that, I already had access to Google Bard. And so I was using Google Bard, but Google Bard is not as good. And it hallucinates a lot more and gets things wrong. And so it sounds like it's about right. And then you look it up elsewhere on Google, for example, and you realize, no, it's not right. And so I'm just more wary of it, whereas I've tested the same questions with ChatGPT and it gives me correct answers. And so I think they're ahead of the game. And so I think it's got a tipping point, basically, where now it's much more useful. Yeah. But I mean, the main reason I signed up, and I think this relates to future of interface design, is that I know in October they're releasing DALL-E 3 and you can access it through ChatGPT. So I wanted to be ready, because one sort of aspect of interface design that is often closed off to designers is coding. But another aspect is illustration. And if you're focused on visual design, like I often am, I've worked with an illustrator relatively recently and I've realized how great it is to have an illustrator at your beck and call to basically say, oh, can you draw an illustration for this? And so now I'm quite excited about AI in general because of its ability to create illustrations, which are much less likely to be wrong in the sense that code can be wrong. Right. And I think probably much easier to fix for me as a designer because I sort of think more visually in the first place. So I could bring in, for example, the Figma and do some patchwork, whereas because I understand how pictures work, you know, that's a general thing that everyone understands. Whereas code, it's much harder for me to bring it into, you know, a text editor and do some patchwork and make sure it goes right. So I'm quite excited about that in the sense that more designers will be able to write their own code to improve interaction in their own side projects, but also more designers will have access to illustration. And I do appreciate the controversy around what if you don't hire illustrators anymore. I think probably if you hired an illustrator, you'd get a better result quicker. But for people like me who don't have a budget to hire illustrators for personal projects, it feels like a big step in the right direction.
Yeah, I can definitely see that for personal projects. I think if I'm working at a giant company with lots of money, I would still push for hiring a professional in the same way that I would want engineers and designers to be like doing other things. But I don't know much about DALL-E. Does it like, how could you patch it? Does it give you like proper formats? Like what kind of file formats does it give you? Or is it just like a image?
I don't actually know. I assume it's going to spit out a JPEG, but I know that the reason they're folding it into ChatGPT is because then you can do a back and forth
until
by chatting and saying,
things.
Yeah, correct this. Whereas before it was a lot of quite code-like prompting. You know, I was never interested in writing what is essentially code to describe an image because you have to include all of the sort of style tags you wanted and do it in this style and make it look like it was shot through this camera.
Yeah.
And that's a very technical approach. Whereas being able to chat, I mean, it hasn't been released yet. Maybe it's going to be useless, but being able to chat and describe an image and describe the changes you want seems like quite a powerful combination.
Yeah. On that end of like using ChatGPT or chat type functionality with AI, from the design systems lens, I think it's going to be quite useful for documentation. We've already kind of seen some people like diving into this, but basically you could feed your entire design system documentation site into a model and then people can chat with it about your design system and get the answers they need versus just like sifting through your documentation. So I feel like that's going to become a standard, like basically just searching through like a smaller set of information is going to be, or not searching, chatting and asking questions about what you're trying to achieve. I think that'll be kind of standard with design systems in the future.
Yeah, well, this is an interesting topic. Benedict Evans, who's a tech commentator, I don't know really how to describe him. He used to work for A16Z, Andreessen, however you pronounce them, Horowitz, the VC firm. He was an analyst, and so all he does all day, it seems, is read books about war and tech history. And he writes a newsletter that's read by a lot of people. And I'm always interested in his takes, even though sometimes the language is a bit stuffy for me. Not stuffy, but, you know, it's a bit dry for me. So I can't keep interested for long. But he writes very interesting takes about tech, basically, and where it might go in the future because of where it's come from in the past and how things have happened in the past, sort of unrelated to tech. And so he takes this idea of future predictions quite seriously. And he has this saying that I can't remember which one comes first, chicken or egg, but all search grows until it requires curation, and all curation grows until it requires search. And so in the sort of short term, he's describing this cycle where, well, Yahoo, when they started off, were basically manually curating the web into a list of links you could sort of browse through. And the web grew so fast or so big that that didn't work anymore. And Google came along and they had basically indexed everything and figured out a way to sort of surface the good links to the top, you know, with PageRank. And so it seems like AI is the next step of that, not just in terms of how we designers work but also how we interact with things like design documentation, is that search is actually not really equipped for the amount of information that we have created now. And so it seems like a big future of interfaces in general will be give the whole interface to what is essentially a person who learns it all by heart. Because we have people like that, basically, you can say, oh, I'm looking for this, and they point you in the right direction. A person is sort of better at that kind of interaction than looking through a directory, because you don't necessarily know what it's called or whatever.
Yeah.
Search is not really you know, the best technology for that, whereas it turns out AI is quite good at it.
And people don't like searching, because I am the human on the other side of Slack at work, like 90% of the time, answering those kinds of questions that people would find if they searched. But they don't want to search. They'd rather just ask a question, I think.
Yeah.
So.
One thing I will say is that I feel a bit bad for the environment. I assume it takes a lot of electricity to do this. But I will ask ChatGPT, for example, for like, oh, give me 5 paragraphs of lorem ipsum.
Yeah.
And it'll give them to me with new lines after the opening P tag and before the closing P tag. So it's like formatting it in a certain way. And I'll say, oh, could you reformat it so there's no new lines? And then I suddenly had this thought, like I've asked this basically vast global data center that they must be running ChatGPT on to reformat some paragraph tags for me. And I'm wondering how many Bolivia's worth of electricity I'm using whenever I just ask ChatGPT to do like something that I could do really easily, but it's a bit annoying. So I'll just ask the computer to do it. Like, is it going to turn out that's really intensive and we shouldn't be asking trivial things?
That's kind of scary to think about. I think that is like environmentally friendly design is going to be a thing. I mean, it's already kind of a thing, but even more so in the future. And I think that does play into it, but I don't have a lot of knowledge around it to like speak intelligently about it.
Well, it could be that training the model is basically the intensive part and querying it is relative, because Apple's doing it now on their phones. They're running some of their models on device. So maybe it's actually quite energy efficient once you've got it trained. Speaking of Apple, I don't know if you're happy to move on from AI and the future of interface, but that's another topic that came to mind when we were thinking about this in advance was spatial computing as Apple has defined it. I don't know if that's going to be the future, but as long as it works well, part of me wants it to be the future.
Why is that?
Just because we've got interfaces essentially. I don't mind if we had 2D interfaces for the rest of time. I think a lot of movies, films in the past have been imagining interfaces as like 3D worlds you walk around in, but it's not particularly efficient to do that. You know, if you have to translate a 2D space into a 3D space and suddenly you're traveling distances to get to the next folder or something, that sounds really frustrating. So I quite like spatial computing because it moves the 2D interfaces into a 3D world, and it feels like 2D is for the interface itself, the actual interactions you're doing, and that makes it simpler because you've just got one plane to interact on rather than two, if that's the right word, two dimensions. But then your organizational system, your window manager essentially, is 3D. And there have been quite a few interesting concepts around that in the past that people haven't been able to put together because it's quite, you know, intense, I guess. But Apple seems to be giving it a good go. And if anyone can make it mainstream, it feels like they probably have a good shot just because they care a lot about the subtle details that sort of tips it over from annoying to convenient.
I think it'll take a while for it to become a commodity, though, like an affordable product that anyone can have. But I agree. I mean, I think it's really interesting to think about websites that you're designing now appearing in that realm. And like, what do you need to take into consideration for that? Mm. When are we going to start worrying about that? Or are we going to? I don't know. I mean, I think it's even now, it's hard to get people to worry about what their website looks like on a mobile phone. So, and that's like, that's kind of ridiculous to say. So thinking about this other realm or like a spatial awareness thing, I think it's going to be really hard to get designers and engineers to focus on it unless it's like so amazing and cool and it blows everyone away that they want to focus on it. But it seems kind of like just an additional challenge that people will probably ignore and things will look broken.
Well, that's,
I don't know.
The point about the phone is really interesting because I don't think the phone, the small screen you hold in your hand is the ideal state for a screen. I think it's just convenient.
Yeah.
And they've been getting larger and larger because we want larger and larger spaces to sort of work on. But they're sort of constricted by our pockets or our bags or whatever we keep our phones in. But if you take what Apple's doing or is about to do with spatial, with Vision, no, what's it called? Vision Pro? Vision Pro. Sure. I guess the natural extension of that is that you're not wearing a headset at all, right? You're just seeing the things that Vision Pro is showing you without having to wear anything. So maybe it's first Vision Pro and then the standard Vision device, which is maybe light to weight. And then we go to, what do you call them? Contact lenses. And then we go to just brain implants, right?
Oh,
because once you've got that, you don't need to design for the small screen because who would have a window that size floating in the space in front of them?
Yeah.
That's just a bad way to view any content. Like if you, that's why no one watches films, for example, on a phone unless they really need to or they're a bit young because they...
Do you know how many people like watch movies on laptops, like at their home where they have a TV available?
Yeah, I mean, we actually do that. I think the laptop is just big enough because you can move it closer. You can put it on a table directly in front of you and it's almost the same size as a TV way across the room.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But phones is too far. I've done it myself. But,
okay.
It's not ideal. And so it feels like the ideal is that you can have a window essentially of any size in the space in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
That feels easier to predict or think about. It doesn't feel easy to say what's beyond the window, right? How do we treat those sorts of, like just a website, the concept of a website, how do you translate that to a 3D space? I don't really want to think about that. It sounds scary. I don't like it. But that's why I like what Apple's doing, because they're creating this bridge between the 2D content we have now and the 3D space we want everything to be in. They're saying, oh, we'll just put the window in the 3D space. You can move it around as much as you want. And that means we can keep designing websites the way we are now.
And it's really cool.
Put them in a new place. Yeah. So I like that. And then we don't have to think about responsive design as much, except, you know, in the sense of resizing the window in the moment rather than let's target this device, let's target this device.
Yeah, more like reflow and zoom, screen zooming and like that kind of, which we should be doing now anyways, but it tends to get ignored. Do you think small screens are going to go away at some point?
They're such a fundamental part of our lives that it seems a bit strange to think that, but I feel like if a technology is not the ideal state it could be, then new technology will already push away from it rather than towards it.
Hmm.
Makes me think about my watch.
You know, I was just thinking about a watch. Yeah. What about an Apple watch?
And that's even more, it's even more restrictive, but maybe there's still reasons that you'd want something you can quickly check.
Yeah.
But then if you've got whatever it is, a brain implant in 50 years time running all the time and it's showing you a constant sort of heads up display, then even a watch, you know, you probably only wear it for archaic fashion reasons rather than informational reasons.
Hmm. Yeah.
And if you think about it, the phone and the watch sort of act like floating screens anyway. Like you've got your computer at home that you sit in front of, or your laptop that you sit down at a desk to use, or a table in a bar or something. Not a bar, a cafe. But your phone and your watch basically act as these floating screens that you carry around with you all the time. And so that feels like a natural extension of that. Feels like they're floating around in your vision, but, you know, not in your hand. Because I can hold my phone in front of me as I walk around if I want. And many people do. And it distracts them and they walk into the road and get hit by a car. Hopefully yeah. Spatial computing has an answer to that.
I think spatial computing will make me leave the house more, which sounds ridiculous, but like, I think often because I work from home full time, every week I'm like, I should really go work somewhere else. Like I should just bring my laptop, go work at a co-working spa or a cafe or something, or the beach. I don't know. I've seen people doing that in San Diego. Don't understand, but you can definitely do that. But like, I like my monitor. I like my big setup here. So it'd be kind of neat to be able to replicate that like outside of the house and see other people. While we all stare into nothingness awkwardly in a public cafe.
Yeah. Okay. So picture this. It's 8:59 a.m. and Katie leaves the house on a Monday morning. She pulls up GitHub Copilot on her heads-up display and says, Copilot, do my work for me, and then goes to the zoo.
That sounds like an awesome day.
And somehow still gets paid.
Yeah. Well, I told it what to do. Only I can know the proper commands.
Yeah. We're all just paid money after all this has come out just because we know the special code words. We sort of created our own little work forts.
I mean, it's not all that different from reviewing someone else's code. Like that's
I was about to say,
part of the job.
With the ChatGPT stuff I'm doing, I was saying that it'd be nice to give it to someone who knows what they're doing to check. But then maybe the same, I know this has come up many times before in the community, but maybe the same for design in the sense that I ask it to produce some designs, but then I'm the expertise basically that checks it over and makes sure there's no problems with it. Because maybe it'll always have some subtle problems. Maybe we'll always want someone to check it over. And maybe that's the design of the future. But yeah, hopefully not.
Like a little design mentor. Like you're working with your intern. And they're producing a couple of designs, and then you're pairing up to look at it together, pointing out things that are wrong and refining it. I mean, that's a huge part of the design job. That's also how you like progress as a designer. So it's just that you wouldn't be doing it with another human. You'd just be refining a robot's work.
Yeah, you're right. It's a standard career progression that you design less and sort of advise more.
Yeah.
And just like with JavaScript and ChatGPT, I'm basically advising it and saying that doesn't work. And I'm even, it's sort of helping me learn more JavaScript, I think, because I'm seeing essentially where it's gone wrong. I also know enough code to be, well, not as dangerous as you, but enough to be able to sort of read through it and see what it's doing. And so I can basically point it out to ChatGPT and say this part is wrong, I think.
And then it will say, yes,
guide it in the right direction.
This is why it's wrong. I like that. And then you do, then you can like confirm or learn why things are broken.
But I definitely feel the intern vibes you're describing. It's like it's stumbling around trying different things.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, oh no, try this instead. So I guess that just makes me feel bad for intern designers of the future because they might not exist. Whereas the senior designers will be here.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Like, so if we free up all of this time and we are designing less and refining more and like coaching, what are we doing? Like, is there something new that we haven't, that isn't a part of our like daily work that we haven't discovered yet because we simply haven't had the time or space? I don't know.
Yeah, you can easily imagine that it might go to like everyone who trains as a designer is essentially training as a creative director. And so they're not producing the pixels or writing the code or whatever, but they are. It's hard to imagine that companies will let computers decide what humans will like.
Yeah.
Maybe that is further down the line once they're even better than we are. But basically you're saying we need a new brand. Maybe you don't want to give ChatGPT full control over what that brand should be. Maybe you want someone who
that feels has had a lot of
experience. Yeah. Yeah, and you see some things about how people have started adding badges to their work to say, like, designed 100% by humans.
I haven't seen this.
Yeah,
have you seen this?
It's quite rare at the moment. I see it at the bottom of some landing pages for, like, products, you know, that they're saying, we didn't use AI for this. Huh. And that starts to feel like a bit of a badge of honor, but those markets are always smaller than the markets where humans have to do it. Where humans have to do it, it's a massive global industry. And where humans don't have to do it, but they choose to, it's like small, niche, artisanal, whatever. So there's some less exciting and a bit sadder sort of predictions in there, but that's just the way the world goes, I suppose.
Okay. I mean, I guess there's always going to be the opposite. Like, if one side of the industry is saying, we used AI for all this, we also have new AI products, we've put AI in everything, selling that like crazy, there's always going to be the opposite end of, like, we don't use AI here. This is a no AI shop made by humans. Like, that's just how it's going to go with any trend, probably. So I guess it's not that surprising.
I still use a hand plane to round the corners on my buttons. you probably wouldn't use a hand plane to round corners. I'm enraging the one woodworker who listens to our podcast.
Okay. Did you have any other bits of technology that you wanted to mention in this?
No, I've talked enough.
Okay. We pretty
much. Anything come to your mind?
We pretty much covered everything I wanted to mention too. The only thing that I think we're just going to see more of is, like, adaptive and dynamic type designs that have more user preferences involved. So our thinking about, and this might be more of a design systems thing, I guess, or like thinking about patterns, but something that you find yourself arguing about a lot in interface design, like arguing with your team about, is different visual design. Like, should links be underlined? That's one. When and where should they be underlined? And instead of arguing about it, because, you know, it's something that improves the design for some users, but some people don't like it, just pushing those things into user preferences and letting people decide. So giving the user, I guess, a little bit more control over the interface and how they want it to appear. We already do this with themes and color modes and dark and light themes and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think we'll start to see more of that. Like I said, with links is one, but like also typography, typefaces, density, spacing, that kind of thing. I feel like that will become more prevalent, especially as design systems have a lot more technology around design tokens now and have a lot of, like, mechanisms in place to achieve that kind of thing. It becomes more of, like, a product decision when we're letting the user make those kinds of calls.
Yeah, one thing I've always been interested to sort of observe is that when people get familiar enough with some foundational part of interfaces, the companies that make interfaces like Apple can then move on to something new and they can introduce a newer concept. And so the home button on the iPhone was sort of ingrained in everyone's mind. And then they introduced the home indicator, whatever it's called, the bar that you push up. They tried something brand new. And I think it would have been harder to do that if they had not introduced the concept of going home quickly in the iPhone before that. And so I think you're right that once people get familiar with these foundational things like the size of the text, maybe it's easier to say, oh, this thing you're familiar with, you can change it yourself and we'll respect those preferences.
Yep.
That's always sort of been a dream in some ways for things like accessibility, but it's always seemed like a hard one to achieve just because people aren't familiar with those concepts and they don't know that their web browser has a text size setting. Yeah. Because why would they be poking around in their settings? But, you know, that was people who had not used a computer before necessarily, but in 50 years' time, basically everyone will have used a computer. And so hopefully they'll all know that settings exist and they'll sort of look for those, unless they change the concepts completely, in which case all of that was for nothing.
I feel like we look for settings more on mobile devices and in apps than we do on web apps, but the same thing. I mean, it's kind of like Material U, is that what it was called? That was a big thing behind that whole concept, is like everything is prepared for you to make your own custom changes and it will still look good. Like, we've given you some predefined things. So that might be, it might not be like, change the font, change the typeface of this website to anything you want. It's like, here's a few options. Here's a few different size options, that kind of thing. So there's still, and there's still a designer involved, because the last thing you want, which you get anyways, is complaints about the design of your site that was not your fault. I mean, we already get this with like extensions. People build browser extensions to reskin websites like GitHub all the time, and then they have bugs. They're like, this thing is broken. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's not actually our fault, but okay. So I just
there,
I think
there is
a
broken thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right.
I can
it does
confirm
look
something. Yeah.
But yeah. That's the last thing that I had here.
Mm. Brave New World.
Yeah, I feel kind of excited. I think it's, I mean, we talked a lot about ChatGPT, and I know it is a topic that not everyone feels great about, but I just really love how you're using it. It makes me very happy. I love hearing about designers trying to be more dangerous and figuring out how to achieve things on their own and not having to wait around for someone to respond to them on Slack, or having to like poke random people and ask for favors constantly. It's like so liberating to just be like, I don't need you. I'll just ask this robot and probably get 90% of the way there. So
we named the robot Katie.
Yeah, there you go. So that's my takeaway. Designers should use it to write more code. Not even just JavaScript. You could definitely learn CSS and HTML. But it's not something I use it for, because I already know those things. But
it's good at writing those, but then it doesn't write them in the way that I want to write CSS. So I see its output. I'm like, what are you doing? And I assume a JavaScript expert would do the same thing with the code I'm happy with.
That's the funny thing. Yeah, because I can't see those patterns. To me, I have to constantly ask, especially with React code. I'm like, is this good React code? Or I don't, like, what is it? It's doing the thing that I want it to do. I don't know if it's good. So it does take some refining, and I don't have that kind of knowledge typically, but cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks everyone for listening this week, and we'll catch you in the next one.
Goodbye.